This is Hollywood Outsider, and welcome to a special episode of our show where we are talking about the new Marvel movie, Guardians of the Galaxy. And don't worry if you thought you were downloading the latest normal episode of the Hollywood Outsider. It is still there. Hasn't gone anywhere. Just go back and download it. You can go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, wherever it is that you, your podcasting app, wherever it is you find us, you can download the most recent episodes there. If you have not seen Guardians of the Galaxy and you want to remain spoiler-free, now would be a great time to save this episode until you do. In fact, we recommend running out to the theater and seeing it. It's a lot of fun, because from this point forward, spoilers are allowed. My name is Aaron Peterson, and with me along for this travel through the galaxy are my fellow hoes, Justin McCumber, Brian Williams. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
It's Sunday morning. I'm in my underwear, and my mic is in my face. Let's do this.
And I didn't even bother putting underwear on.
I like to get a little fancy.
Wow.
And that's what you're sticking to the seat.
So you guys saw it. We all saw it. What, the Thursday? Is it really fair to call it a opening night anymore? I mean,
I don't even understand the concept of premiere nights anymore, because every big movie says it's coming out on one day, but we all know that's the previous day. It's almost like some big shell game that I don't get. But yes, we all did see it Thursday at 7 p.m. and we're texting furiously about 2 hours later.
Which is always a good sign, because a lot of movies, if we text at all, it's like, bleep this movie.
Well, that sucked.
Yeah, that sucked. Well, I'll never get those 2 hours back. If it's a Michael Bay movie, I'll never get those 3 hours back.
You know, I think this is the first one that I can remember anyway, that all four of us saw it on the opening night.
Since you mentioned four, we should probably say Scott couldn't make it. He's in the great UP right now, I think. I think he's way up north.
UP?
Upper Peninsula.
That would be the Upper Peninsula for some of us people that are south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Familiar okay. with geography? Yeah, UP. They're trying to be their own state. It could happen. So when you went to the theater, I mean, it's had a huge opening, but was there anyone at your theater? Because mine was a little thin.
The theater I was in was probably about half full. So it was more than some premieres I've seen, less than others. But I mean, even when I went to see The Avengers, of course, I went to that whole Marvel movie marathon, which takes a particular type of movie watcher to go to. That's not your regular Joe Schmo.
Wait a minute. You went to a Marvel movie marathon?
Well, no, I meant for the Avengers.
Oh, okay.
When I saw that one. But for this one, it was about half full, which was about what I expected.
I'm trying to picture, how do you watch 10 movies in a row? That seems so long.
What movies could you watch that possibly take up all day that leads up to this movie? But my theater was about the same. I mean, it was probably about half full. I was a little nervous about that, because when I saw that, it was one of those things where I was like, oh man, this may not do very well. But that logic was definitely not sound.
No, it did fine. It did very well. We'll talk about that a little later. Now, we liked it. We all liked it to varying degrees. And I will say, be sure to read Justin's review of it. He gave a glowing, perfect score, right? 10 out of 10?
10 out of 10, fucker. Yeah. This movie is awesome.
Now, let's start right up. Is this Guardians of the Galaxy the Star Wars for this generation?
Ooh, I don't know. Now, there is a lot of, you can compare a lot to Star Wars, but I don't know if this is quite the Star Wars for this generation. That's one of those things time will tell, but I'm not ready to call it that just yet.
Yeah, there are a lot of comparisons that you could make. I mean, Groot, Chewbacca, you know, big hulking creatures that really don't have much of a vocabulary. Quill, obviously being kind of your Han Solo type, though there's a little Skywalker in there. But because Abrams is doing episode 7 and that, you know, 8 and 9 will also be coming, Star Wars is still Star Wars, I think, for this generation. But when it comes to the Marvel films, this is definitely the closest that Marvel has come to trying something very space opera-esque. Mm-hmm. And if that was their intention, then they succeeded in spades, because this is very much an action romp of a film, very much a space opera. And the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, this is great. I can't wait to see Star Wars. This is great. I can't wait to see Star Wars.
See, I the reason I asked that is because I haven't seen so many people that have not compared it to like Captain America or Iron Man so much, but as to Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's the number one comparison I've seen. And I get it because it's in space. It's really not part of the Earth that most of the Marvel movies have occurred on. So
I'm sorry, that's Earth.
I'm sorry, Earth. Sorry.
Whenever you talk about aliens and outer space, we have a different name for the planet.
ERFF.
Yeah. There's space battles. There's aliens of every shape and color. It's definitely much more Star Wars-y than Thor or Captain America. So it's an apt comparison, but no, Star Wars is still Star Wars.
Oh, do you like it better than the prequels?
Very much so. Just because this had fun. I mean, that was one thing that, well, this isn't a Star Wars podcast, but those movies, they weren't all that fun. This movie, there was a grin, a Joker grin on my face almost from beginning to end, and I can't count the number of times I laughed out loud at sight gags and jokes. It was just fantastically funny.
Yeah, same here. I'm laughing hysterically the whole time, even clapping. I never clap at a movie.
You clapped?
There was three or four times where I actually, it was like the little golf clap type thing.
For you, that's a big deal. And that's huge. Is. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of speaking of Star Wars, I mean, it's one of the best things about, one of the most notable things about Star Wars is the score, the music of it. What'd you think about the, using really just relied more on heavily on this, like a 70s soundtrack versus a traditional score here?
Yeah. Tyler Bates did the score for this, and he also did the scores for the Thor movies. And, you know, looking back on it, I can remember thinking, this is pretty good score music. This isn't bad at all. But when it was over, I could barely remember what the orchestral score sounded like, because that 70s soundtrack, that awesome mix number one, was such a great compilation of classic rock songs that were all familiar with to varying degrees depending on the song. But, you know, it's not a freedom rock kind of, you know, CCR. It's not the biggest hits from the 70s. It's more the B cuts. But man, they're great songs used to great effect. And I don't think I would ever think of this movie and then think of the scores music. It will always be Spirit in the Sky or Ooga Chaga and all those. It's just great songs.
I think it's hooked on a feeling. I don't think it's actually
called
Ooga Chaka.
They should just call it the Ooga Chaka song.
The Slee Stack song or something.
Same thing. I was actually kind of surprised because I'm not a 70s music fan. And I don't know if that makes me a bad person or a bad person in my age group or whatever, but I just never been a fan of it. But they use it to great degrees, especially the opening.
Oh, shit.
Where they do the opening credits and he's just running around kicking swamp rats or whatever the hell those things are. Those little aliens crawling around.
What do you call swamp rats?
Yeah, that's swamp rats. I didn't want to say swamp rats because that's Star Wars. So I went a different way.
Shoot him with a G16 back home.
And he's just dancing around. I think that's great. You started
even
with
one as a mic.
He started with a dance off by himself. I thought it was fantastic.
Oh my God, the dance off.
Have you ever seen a dance off in a science fiction movie in your life?
Oh God.
You are
the climactic battle.
You are the Kevin Bacon. You are the Kevin Bacon. It was a great, good choice. I did not think it was going to play nearly as well as it. In fact, I thought maybe it was just going to have like one or two songs throughout. I did not realize they would use it so much. Kudos, James Gunn.
Yeah, that kind of surprised me too. There was maybe once in there though that where I thought, all right, maybe this is a bit overdoing it. But for the most part, it really worked. And who did anybody not see Awesome Mix Volume 2 tape being the present?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I didn't even think of it until they got to the very end and he started opening the present. And then I started wondering, well, I wonder what is in that. And the idea of another tape didn't hit me until right before it actually appeared.
Well, hopefully he's got another present for the third movie and it'll be the Awesome Mix Volume 3. That would be great. Or maybe for Avengers 3, the awesome Earth mix. I don't know.
Did the music, though, the 70s music, did it remind you at all or make you think of Quentin Tarantino a little bit?
A little, but Tarantino is...
And not in a bad way.
No, you mean how he uses songs to score his movies?
Well, songs, and sometimes those songs are little known or rarely known.
But see, I don't think that he really used little known songs. I mean, where Tarantino uses horribly obscure music, I mean, good luck knowing most of those songs before you hear them in the movie. And this one, I knew pretty much every song that came up.
There were a few of them. I was like, what? I'd never heard
of them. Yeah, well, they're songs that you just don't hear, you know, in play most of the time now. It's just they are that old. I mean, a lot of this stuff is from early 70s, and mm-hmm. It's just not one of those things you hear quite a bit.
I was kind of wondering, maybe this is just me, but it was 1988, he gets sucked up in the spaceship. Why didn't they have more like Cyndi Lauper and Wham or Duran Duran?
It was his mother's.
It was his mother's
tape. She made it for him, and she is more a child of the 60s and 70s.
So. All right.
So those songs work better for her. And frankly, I don't know if I want to hear Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go in Guardians of the Galaxy. I do. I don't think that's necessary.
I do. Wake me up before you go-go. No, just me?
Yeah, right. I don't know if the dance scene with the aliens and stuff at the beginning of it would have worked quite as well.
Oh, Groot the Dancing Tree to a little Wham? I could see that. I could see it.
A little Karma, Karma, Karma Chameleon. Oh, what you want?
Don't get that in my head, man. It'll never leave.
Because you got to have faith, faith. Ooh.
Wow, you're just going to do the entire George Michael au revoir.
Drop it.
Hey.
Drop it now!
Hey, cool, man. No problem. No problem at all.
How do you know about this?
I don't even know what that is. I'm just a junker, man. I was just check us out.
You don't look like a junker. You're wearing rabbit to God.
It's just the outfit, man. Ninja Turtle, you better stop poking me.
What is your name?
My name is Peter Quill, okay? Dude, chill out.
Move!
Why?
Ronan may have questions for you.
Hey, you know what? There's another name you might know me by.
Star-Lord.
Who?
Star-Lord, man. Legendary outlaw.
Now, in this team, of course, we've got Peter Quill, a.k.a. Star-Lord. We've got Gamora. We've got Drax the Destroyer, Rocket Raccoon, and Groot. Who amongst those five did you think was, you know, either the best or your favorite? Kind of the same thing, maybe. Aaron, what did you think?
Rocket Raccoon. I really thought it would be Peter Quill, because everybody's been talking about how fantastic Chris Pratt was in this role, and I agree, he was good. But man, Bradley Cooper, I did not. First of all, I thought the idea of the raccoon was going to be kind of ridiculous, and then I knew Bradley Cooper was voicing it, so I'm like, all I'm going to hear is Bradley Cooper. I'm going to hear, you know, Face from A-Team, and If I did not know it was Bradley Cooper, I would not have heard Bradley Cooper. And that to me meant that I was convinced there is a talking raccoon by the end of the movie. That's a win for me.
How did they train this thing?
Yeah, I'm like, how did they make it sit still? This thing is magnetic. It holds a gun? How does that happen? And he was the most fun. He seemed the smartest character of all of them. And I just loved him. Yeah, I just loved him. And he's adorable. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, same here. He was, I actually tried to listen, knowing it was Bradley Cooper, I actually focused on his voice and was trying to listen for him, and I still couldn't do it. And that is a huge testament to either, and I'm sure it's a combination of either his voice talents and maybe some after audio adjustments or something like that, some mm-hmm. post work.
Some Britney Spears work, yeah.
Some auto tune.
Lil Wayne.
But, And that is just a testament to how good this whole crew did. And it's just one of those things where, you know, Aaron, I told you this a couple of days ago, where it's when I watch like an animated movie and I know Ryan Reynolds is in it or Samuel L. Jackson is a iguana or something like that. You know, you see these characters and that's all you know, if the voice is that prominent, that's all I see anyway. And it to me, it's distracting because I don't see a red iguana. I see Samuel L. Jackson there. Mm-hmm. And this was not the case with Bradley Cooper. He does that kind of Jersey-ish accent. That was phenomenal and really, honestly, him and Groot both stole the show, but that's just kind of...
Can I just say how surprised I am about Groot? I really did not think he would be that sympathetic a character.
Oh, God.
I mean,
those facial expressions, oh, man.
It's basically, an ant from Lord of the Rings. And the, like, he's eating himself. And
luckily, he moves faster than they do.
A little bit. I love the animation of him. Him and Raccoon were fantastic.
I would love to see a Groot and Hodor team up.
The script is so easy to write.
It is.
Justin, who is your favorite?
You know, I'm going to go with Gamora.
Really?
I like Zoe Saldana as an actress. I really like what she brought to Uhura in the Star Trek movies. And in this one, I really thought she brought a lot of skill as an actress and as the fight choreography they gave her. But what she really brought out was a lot of sympathy from me. I mean, her history, her background in the movie is tragic. And then she has to work for this guy who is, you know, Thanos, who's just a terrible person. Now she's got this chance to, you know, maybe redeem herself and stop something terrible from happening. And she takes it, and she's unapologetic about that. And so whenever she was on screen, no matter who she was working off of, I felt like she was doing an amazing job and bringing something special out of them, especially Pratt's Peter Quill. I thought they worked really, really well together.
I think it's kind of funny that none of us actually picked Pratt.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that by the time we were about through the halfway point of the movie, I started wondering, I felt like he wasn't the star, even though all the trailers and all the talk had been he's the star of the movie. They gave so much screen time to everyone else that he just felt like he was part of a team and not the front man. And so I didn't feel like he got special extra time or treatment on the movie screen, because everybody kind of got it. So I liked him, but he's kind of us in the movie to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the human guy. Everyone else has got something, you know, more special and unique going on. So it doesn't surprise me that we don't find him to be the best. He's not the best, but for me, he's also not the worst of the team, which kind of brings me to, who do you think was the weakest member of our little entourage here? And Brian, why don't you go first?
I've got to, I'm probably going to steal a little bit of thunder here, but I've got to go with Gamora. I'm not a Zoe Saldana fan. I want to like her. I've seen her in a lot of things. She's very, I don't know, to me, she's the same person every time. I don't know why she gets all these physical roles. She just doesn't bring it for me. I could have been fine with just about anybody else. I didn't think she did a bad job. I just felt she's just kind of forgetful for me, and just really didn't, I don't know.
Yeah,
would like to have seen somebody that is this kind of badass assassin. I would have liked to have seen more. And
well, I'll
just didn't get
this
it from her.
I'll spring this on you since I'm just now kind of thinking of it. D.H. Cheney on the Facebook group asked who we thought might better play Gamora than Zoe Saldana. I don't think she was a fan either. You may not have an answer at the tip of your
Zoe
tongue.
Zoe Bell.
But... Mm. Mm.
Okay.
She's definitely tougher. Yeah. I can't even argue that one.
Just off the top, that's just off the top of my head. I mean, I could do some digging and everything and try to come up with somebody maybe a little bit more that has maybe it's accepted more artistically or something. But Zoe Bell just brings to me right off the top of my head is somebody that's very physical. And I mean, she's a stunt woman by trade, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad. I think she's great for the stunts. I just don't know if she's a very good emotional actress.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who I would pick. I'm still weighing on that one. But I agree with Brian. She's the weakest for me too. I just think, and it's nothing against, I didn't think she did a bad job. For me, she's like, when you go to Walmart and you buy one of those utility closets or something and you put them together, she's slot B. You know, you just put slot A and a slot B and it goes together. She fits, but she doesn't bring anything extra to it. I just never find her to be extraordinarily charismatic. She doesn't bring the movie down. She doesn't degrade it or anything. She just doesn't bring it up either. She's just kind of there for me. I try to like her. She's like Brian said, she's kind of, yeah, she's the same in everything.
And I really liked her. I thought she brought a really great game, both acting and
yeah, you already said that.
Our fight. So I think you both are wrong. For me, it was Drax.
Oh, but you're wrong.
I liked Drax.
You're not going to get that last word in and try to stump
Drax
our opinion.
Drax has got a couple of lines in the film, but for the most part, he's just kind of there. And of the team, if someone had to have been killed off at some point, losing him would have been, for me, the easiest pill to swallow as opposed to any of the others. He did a good job. I thought Batista did a great job of conveying this guy's anger, but also a bit of nobility to him. And he's perfectly fine. Just kind of like you guys were with Gamora. I was kind of like, he's there, but he's not doing anything too special for me.
I got to say that he did – He has a lot of funny asides. Like, he's great with a one-liner, but when it came to the more dramatic parts, I agree. He didn't really completely sell me on that. Thankfully, this is more of a fun movie, so it didn't need to be 100% dramatic or anything. But there were definitely those scenes where I thought they could have done probably a little better.
Why would I put my finger to my throat?
See, that's fun. Metaphors just go over his head. It would not go over my head because I would catch it.
His people, they don't have metaphors.
And I got to tell you, Peter Quill, we didn't talk enough. His line where, what was it? If she had a black light, this thing would look like a Jackson Pollock painting. Oh, my God. I was almost in tears. One of the funniest movie lines I've heard in forever. That was so well done. So well done. Well, guys, we were talking about weakest of the team, but I got to bring this up, and I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer because I know some people loved him, some people didn't. But my biggest issue with the movie, my main issue with the movie, honestly, was Ronan. And that was Lee Pace. And I don't know, it's not the look of him. I think he looks badass. I think he carries himself with presence. But every time he talked, I don't know if it's the writing or the acting, but it just felt like, what? You just walked in from a sci-fi movie. I just did not like him at all when he spoke.
Yeah, I would be inclined to agree with you on this. He was one of the characters, when I heard he was the villain in the movie, I kind of cringe because from what I remember from the comic books, he wasn't very scary looking to me. And he was kind of cheesy looking. And I was like, all right. Then I saw a couple of images and was like, okay, well, he's pretty impressive and everything, you know, scary looking. Yeah. And see him in the movie. I'm like, he's got that presence. He's kind of intimidating. And again, he opens his mouth and you're just like, all right, not so scary. And just, I wasn't very impressed either, but he didn't have to do a whole lot of explaining. Most of his was kind of a physical thing, so I was fine with it. For me, it was easier to overlook.
I liked him. You know, we talked about this via text after the movie. You weren't a big fan, but I really like Lee Pace. I had no problem with his acting. I had no problem with the lines. I mean, as far as his reason for, you know, his villainy, little weak, but still, as the villain of the piece, I liked what he brought to it. He was a little petulant, but the guy was so big and that look that they gave him was so hulking. That I, you know, overall, I enjoyed what he brought to it. He's not probably the best villain that the Marvel movies have had, but I didn't have any issue with him, you know, at all.
Before we move on, we don't really have it in the format, but what did you guys think about James Brolin as Thanos?
I was glad we got to hear him speak and we got more than just that half profile that we got at the end of the Avengers. I was glad to see it. It was just enough to get me excited without, you know, while leaving plenty to hope for in the coming movies.
He was one of, you know, I could see very subtle hints of Brolin, but again, his voice, I didn't really pick up on his voice, and that's what I want to do. I want to focus on the character, not the person doing the voice mm-hmm. or the motion capture. And so that works. I mean, he does, from what I understand, they do the motion capture thing. So it's, I guess, kind of like Andy Serkis. So, mm-hmm. you know, whatever facial expressions he's doing, that's what Thanos is doing. So that if that's the case, then hey, good job. And can't wait to see more. He does have we are seeing more of that menacing, just this is probably the ultra villain mm-hmm. in the Marvel universe. And I think we are starting to get more of a glimpse of that, and probably to his, to his credit.
I just thought of an answer to D.A. Cheney's question. When you're talking about who could do it better than Zoe Saldana, I actually, mm-hmm. now that I've seen the movie, think Karen Gillan would be a better Nebula. Or Nebula, the girl who played Nebula would be a better Gamora. I love the way that she...
Nebula?
What? Well, put Zoe
just
in that role.
Anybody.
Yeah. But I think Karen Gillan, she has... I keep saying Gillian, but I know it's Gillan. She has so much presence, and I love the way that she carried her walk, and she just has more personality, I think. She's got a lot of charm. I just really... I could see her doing that. So there you go. Flip those two. Maybe they could do that, because they're green and blue. They could just...
Every time I looked at Nebula, I kept thinking Gal Gadot every time I saw her. So maybe we could get her to do Nebula.
Hey, I think she's busy, Brian. She's she might be Wonder Woman or something.
Whatever.
She's eating chicken breast right now.
Hey, these people can work out schedules. It's fine.
Yeah.
James Gunn directed this, and he's done... such movies that, well, wrote Dawn of the Dead. He did Scooby-Doo.
Ruh-roh.
Movie 43. Ruh-roh, Shaggy. Super, which was pretty good. Slither. How did this feel like a James Gunn movie to you guys? Or just kind of just feel like Marvel movie and he just happened to be the guy driving the car, Aaron?
Well, let's clarify. He wrote Scooby-Doo and Dawn of the Dead. So if he didn't like Scooby-Doo, that's not really his fault. He didn't direct it. I love him. And if you saw Slither, I am shocked how many A cast members from Slither are actually in Guardians of the Galaxy, because there's quite a few. And B, how much of James Gunn, especially if we watch PG porn, Slither, and all the stuff he's written there, I was shocked how much Marvel actually let him keep his sense of humor in there. You know, when
there's some fucked up shit in there.
There, there is. Ronan getting hit before he even starts his monologue. I think that's totally James Gunn. There's several, and obviously the quirkiness is all him. So I was shocked. I loved it. Absolutely loved it, because it's a director that I've wanted to have that big shot for a long time, and I'm so glad he finally got it.
Yeah, I'm incredibly shocked that Marvel would hire James Gunn to handle this 170
million,
150,
170
something.
Million. Yep.
Yeah, $170 million film. Based on his pedigree. I mean, Slither is probably the biggest movie he did, and that was, 8 years ago?
It's been a while, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it has been a while since he did that one. Super was a really good movie, but that was a very low-budget indie movie that had, no special effects. So the fact that they gave him this franchise to handle is surprising, and that they gave him such a free rein with bringing his particular brand of humor to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, the Marvel movies have always, like I said in my review, they've always had a bit of humor in them, which I love. But this movie is, it's almost a comedy. You could seriously call it an action comedy, and that's exactly what it is. And that's a risk that they took, but I'm glad they did, because it was that humor and the quirkiness that James Gunn brings to a script was there. And I think it elevated this film in a way that if it had been, I think, any other director, I don't think it would have been nearly as fun, because it wouldn't have had that sense of humor, which is desperately needed in a movie where so many people die and so many circumstances are actually quite dire. So it was great, and I'm so glad that this movie is opening as well as it is, because he and Marvel deserve it.
Hey, Brian, did you know James Gunn's work before this? Because most people don't, so don't feel
no,
stupid.
No, not really. He's a name I've heard, but I never really had anything to kind of compare him to, like Shyamalan or, you know, or...
oh, God, keep him away from Marvel.
You know, any of the other guys that are, you know, that have these like landmark movies. And honestly, Slither is one of those movies that has slipped by me. And I keep meaning to try, you know, as one as I keep, you know, I'll hear about it every now and then. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I got to watch that and then forget about it. And
you really know. Should.
It's on Netflix, yeah, I think, you cheap yeah, bastard.
And it's, you know, I've just got a lot in my queue right now.
Whatever.
But I'll try to make a point to remember.
Did anybody see the Nathan Fillion?
I didn't. Cameo? What was it?
He was the way I didn't know until after the fact either, so I didn't realize it. When Groot puts the fingers in that big inmate's nose.
Big blue prison rapist.
Yep. That's Nathan Fillion.
Is it?
Yep. I swear. Yep. Brian actually told me
from
that.
All the prosthetics on his face.
Well, I'm sure it's CGI.
CGI. Whatever.
So maybe they can bring him into the future movies. I don't know, because James Gunn and he are very good friends.
Yeah, I mean, they did Slither, PG Porn together. I mean, if you're going to put Nathan Fillion in a movie, at least fucking make it look like Nathan Fillion.
Well, I think that was the point. It wasn't meant to be a Nathan Fillion cameo. It was just like, I'm going to put you in the movie, but hardly anybody's going to know unless we tell them.
See, I thought maybe he did the voice at the end stinger, which I won't reveal here yet, but...
We have to stop Ronan.
How? I have a plan.
You've got a plan.
Yes.
First of all, you're copying me from when I said I had a plan.
No, I'm not. People say that all the time. It's not that unique of a thing to say.
Secondly, I don't even believe you have a plan.
I have part of a plan.
What percentage of a plan do you have?
You don't get to ask questions after the nonsense you pulled on Nowhere.
I just saved Quill.
We've already established that you destroying the ship that I'm on is not saving me.
When did we establish?
Like 3 seconds ago.
No, I wasn't listening. I was thinking of something else.
Oh.
She's right. You don't get an opinion. What percentage?
I don't know. 12%.
12%?
That's a fake laugh.
It's real.
Totally fake.
That is the most real, authentic, hysterical laugh of my entire life, because that is not a plan.
It's barely a concept.
You're taking their side?
I am Groot.
So what? It's better than 11%. What the hell does that have to do with anything?
Thank you, Groot. Thank you.
Well, Sean on the Facebook group as well, now he had a question that he wanted us to tackle, which was... how much this film's origin for Peter Quill differed from the comic book version of Peter Quill. And I thought, you know, instead of just keeping it to one character, let's quickly and easily handle them both. Now, Brian, have you ever read any of the Guardians of the Galaxy comic books?
No, to me, but not the Guardians that I remember are from probably the, you know, 70s, 80s, maybe early 90s, where they weren't. I don't even think they had comic books. They were always just characters they brought in for a 5 or 6 issue storyline, and then they went back to wherever it was they were from. Mm-hmm. So I never really knew too much about them. Probably the only thing I really knew about them was years ago, Marvel released this Marvel Universe. It was almost like an encyclopedia. Every month there was an alphabetic listing of every character.
I remember that. Yeah.
And I had those pretty much all of those issues and just reading through them and some of those smaller characters. That's just what I remember from them, really. So from what I understand, they've fairly recently, the last, I don't know, 10 years or whatever, had a bigger, I guess, maybe a revival of them or something like that, or kind of a reboot of them. And they got more of the spotlight, but I haven't seen any of those.
Yeah, the Guardians of the Galaxy actually have a kind of a long but sporadic history. They originally were created back in 1969, didn't last very long. Then they came back into the mid-70s, into the late 70s. But then it wasn't until they actually were kind of rebooted in 2008 that I think most people probably became aware of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And for the most part, the comic book version the team resembles what we got on screen. There are, you know, Drax is there, Gamora, Rocket Raccoon, and Groot, as well as Star-Lord. Now,
yeah, the movie's based on, like, the most recent iterations, right?
Right. Yeah. Now, but the characters that they don't have, one of them is Adam Warlock, who, because of the way Marvel's films all seem to be pushing toward the Infinity Gauntlet, I have to imagine at some point Adam Warlock is going to show up, because his comic book history is intricately tied to the Infinity Stones. So at some point he'll show up, but he was originally in the group, as well as a character called Quasar, and another one called Mantis. But, you know, of course all of these characters have had their histories changed a little bit to suit the movie. In the comic book, Quill was never abducted as a child. His father.
Don't. Hood, I don't want to hear.
Hey, I'm just. Can I finish what I'm saying? I'm not going to spoil nothing. His father is an alien in the comic book versions, but they've even rebooted since 2008 Quill's origin. So whoever his father was in the comic book makes no difference. They're going to have somebody completely different in it for the movie, and I have no idea who they're going to go with. But all of them are close to what the comic book had, with some minor differences here and there. But these movies are their own creation, and we really, at this point, we can't look to the comics to answer these questions, because they've made so many changes in iterations of those comic books.
Let's talk about that for a second. Are you guys, you know, you're both comic book fans, and much like George R. R. Martin with Game of Thrones, you know, some of those fans are just irate that the show is starting to veer off from his books. Do you guys, are you okay with that? Or as longtime comic, like from the comic geek, are you okay with that, or does that irritate you?
In this case, I'm fine with it. You know,
it's not a very well-known property to you?
Right, right. And so I really don't have a huge base level of knowledge really to get offended by it. So, in this case, I'm fine with it. And even the slight, I mean, they've, in all of the movies, they've made subtle changes here and there, and I'm fine with it. You know, reading something in a comic book is just a different experience than making something that's appealing to the mass public on the big screen. And there are times where you're going to have to make changes. And also I'm sure they're making changes that have repercussions in future movies that we're not even aware of at this point. So they may have plans for characters that we may look at as being kind of background characters, where they may be getting, you know, the foreground treatment, a la Iron Man. So I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it.
Justin. Yeah, I've got no problem with it. I mean, the history of so many of these characters and groups is so convoluted that even Marvel doesn't keep to a lot of their original stories. I mean, they're constantly rebooting these characters, retconning their histories to take into account things they thought of, you know, after the fact. So, you know, it's a different thing from changing a book, which, you know, especially if you're talking about, say, something like Lord of the Rings, which is so old and so many people have read, and it's, you know, within the context of the Middle Earth saga, it is a defined thing. Comic books are like this quilt that has been torn and repatched and over and over again, that at this point, please let a movie create its own story. Don't try and follow the comics, because you're just going to make a mess.
Yeah, it's not like they were making Thor a woman or anything.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, well, comic books are strange beasts. Make the movies your own thing and you'll be fine.
Now, for people that aren't familiar, this is one thing from the comics that is coming to the movie universe, is the Infinity Gems. We've seen, what, three so far? We've seen the Tesseract, the Aether, and now whatever this orb is.
The purple?
Yeah, the purple. Because I don't think they ever actually name it in the movie. And there's, what, six total that end up, if you link them together, basically give you godlike powers, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the form of the Infinity Gauntlet, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Thanos is ultimately after. Now, What do you think about this? This seems to be the linking force for the Avenger 3 film.
Yeah, Thanos seems to be exactly what they're heading towards. I think for Phase 3, if I'm remembering right, is that kind of what you understand, Brian?
Yeah, that's the sentiment that I've gotten.
Yeah, but yeah, we have seen three of them so far. The Tesseract. And of course they're changing the colors and all that stuff. So there's almost no point in looking to colors to try and tell you which gem it is. You have to actually go to like Wikipedia or something, but Tesseract is the space gem. The, that dark ether power from Thor was the reality gem. And then the one we saw here in this film is the power gem. So we still have Mind, which I actually thought we saw the Mind Gem. I thought that was the stone in Loki's staff, especially considering what it allowed him to do, take control of people's minds. But that doesn't seem to be the case. And then there's also the Soul Gem and the Time Gem waiting to come up. But so far, three of the six have been shown.
Yeah.
And so, I think, isn't this the first film where they actually said an Infinity Gem?
I don't recall if they actually said that. So I don't want to say yes if I don't remember it.
Yeah, I mean, they said it several times in this movie, but I don't remember if in Thor or the other movies if they mentioned the Infinity Stones or gems.
No, in the first Avengers, all it was the Tesseract, because you heard that about 47 times in the screenplay.
So there you go. But the Infinity Gauntlet is definitely where they're headed toward, especially I saw a picture from Comic-Con of all of the Marvel movie character actors. And Josh Brolin was there, and he was actually wearing this giant Infinity Gauntlet.
Yep. Made Hall H cry. Yep.
What do you think you got? You think you guys think we might see any new members of the Guardians? I mean, obviously, we're having a second one that's going to be – they've announced a second movie, but do you think they're going to tack on a few more members? Or I know, Justin, you said there was other characters like Mantis, and I remember him as Nova, but – I know he's part of the Nova Corps, but...
Was Nova in this movie? Somebody asked me that, and I honestly don't know. I don't remember seeing any cameos of him.
No, not that I saw.
From what I remember, he was a... Yeah, I mean, he was a part of this police force that is on Earth. So basically, to us, he's a superhero, but I guess to these other people, he's just another guy. But
yeah, sorry, guys. We're talking too much nerd speak, but, you know.
Well, speaking of Nova real quick... Aaron, did you end up hating John C. Reilly as much as you thought you would?
He was okay. I mean, he's not in it long enough to really make an impression either way. He didn't take me out of it. Okay. Ronan, he literally took me out of it several times, but not John C. Reilly.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah, I like the Nova Corps, but no, I didn't see Nova in particular. If I had to place a guess, I'm thinking Adam Warlock is going to show up in the next movie. And one of the reasons I say that...
Well, he has to. They gave him, like one of the gems in the comics was given to him, right? Or, like, embedded in him or something?
Yeah, I think he had the soul gem embedded in him. But from what I understood,
I thought James Brown had the soul gem.
Get on up!
Get on up!
Damn it. That was funny. Threw me off track. In Thor the Dark World, when they had that end stinger where Sif and I forget the name of the other guy took their stone to the collector for him to house and protect for them, there was supposedly this kind of cocoon/coffin thing you kind of saw. And a lot of people said that somehow related to like Adam Warlock was inside that or something.
Hmm.
So it makes me think that, you know, now that the collector's collection seems to be all fucked up, maybe that's how he gets released or something. But I think Adam Warlock will come in.
I got that. Oh, and I found the names of all six of them since you were trying to remember them. Space, Mind, Soul, Reality, Time, and Power.
Mm-hmm.
None of those are very cleverly named. But
no.
And I think Mind is the Tesseract. So.
You know, the Tesseract was the space gem. Don't go by the color, but it was a space gem because it was able to open those space portals.
Oh, okay.
And all that.
I don't know. I can't even understand. A big thing that makes things come into our world and try to kill us.
A big scary melty thingy.
There you go.
Yeah, maybe a future movie they'll kind of lay it all out for us.
Yeah, they won't. They haven't thus far. They're like, this stone's important. Why? Because we said so. Bam. And then everybody's like, all right. I'm with you.
Cool.
You got a talking raccoon. I can't really argue with you.
So now, basically, for Marvel's films, we actually have two teams now. We've got the Avengers, who have their group film, but they also have their individual ones. We've got the Guardians. Between these two groups, how do you think they compare to each other?
Hmm.
Ooh.
You mean in terms of, like, which one's better or just, like, how they work?
I mean, you can go into which one you find to be a more entertaining one to watch. But also, you know, you've got with the Avengers, you've got Iron Man, who's the tech genius. You got Hulk, who's basically just a big brute. Captain America and, Black Widow, Hawkeye. But none of those, but with the, it's like, how do you think they compare to each other, like in a fight? If the Guardians win against the Avengers.
Oh, shit. Avengers win in about 4 seconds flat. Yes, absolutely.
You got the Hulk and Thor. Yeah, you really don't need anybody else. I mean, Black Widow's not going
to
do.
Could stand up to
no, here's what I say.
He would be toothpicks for the Hulk.
we're going back to Star Wars real quick. If these two are like related to Star Wars, the Avengers are the Jedi Council. They're mystical. They have powers. They can kick everybody's ass with barely moving. And the Guardians of the Galaxy are like Han Solo's friends. You know, they're like the ragtag group that have a couple special skills, but they are not the badass wizards that everybody else is. I mean, the Avengers are superheroes. These guys are just heroes.
Aren't the Rocket Raccoon's going to jump on Iron Man's back and remake him into a bomb?
No, I don't. I don't. I love the option, but no.
Yeah, the Guardians, they would take out Black Widow, Hawkeye, maybe Captain America. Iron Man, maybe. I'm kind of on the fence with him, but after that, you got Thor and the Hulk. There's nothing they can do with that.
No, yeah. I mean, Thor's going to look at him and just say, Hammer, take care of it, or Hammer Time, whatever he's up to. And then he'll just sit back, have a coffee. That's what I'm thinking.
That's true.
Yep. It doesn't make them less enjoyable. It's just, to me, the Avengers is the ultimate team. I mean, you're talking mega heroes united to fight the mass chaos in the universe. Guardians of the Galaxy are like the guys you bring in for the smaller deals. Like the fact that they beat Ronan, they should be pretty proud of themselves. They might want to retire. That's probably the peak. You know, I can't see them doing better than that.
Well, they do owe a little bit to Michael Jackson.
Wait, what?
That whole battle, the dance off.
That's true.
He started pulling Michael Jackson moves.
That was
what
pretty
are you
funny.
Doing?
Completely absurd, but it worked. It was completely absurd, but it worked.
Oh, there you go. Well, you got two teams, and hopefully, I would imagine we won't see them come together till probably the late part of Phase 3, if not Avengers 3.
Now, going back real quick to what Sean's asked us on the Facebook wall, do you guys have any idea? And you cannot bring comic logic in, so if you know from the comics, you can't say. But do you have any idea from the movie who Peter Quill's dad might be?
I have no idea.
I don't either.
I mean, apparently Yondu knows him. So somebody he's worked with in the past, I'm assuming that it's somebody that we will be introduced to later. And
someone ancient as well.
I have one guess, but it's only a guess.
From the movies?
From the movies.
Okay. What's your guess?
I'm thinking Loki.
Hey. All right. I mean,
who was the blue guy? What was Yondu?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they mention that his dad is just a big asshole. Loki is able to go to different planets using his magic, you know, quote unquote. And I could see him coming to Earth, sweeping
Earth.
Some, you know, Earth.
By your own rules, sir.
That's
Earth.
Right. Coming to Earth, sweeping some, you know, young farmer's daughter, whatever she was, off her feet and impregnating her. And then just, you know, hopping out. But not before showing her some kind of angelic face, that would his not Asgardian lineage, but his ice giant lineage that he doesn't know anything about could have helped him in not being immediately destroyed when he grabbed that Infinity Gem.
I like it. All right.
But that's the only character I could possibly think of that we've seen that could be the father, if his father is someone we've seen.
Do you think it's somebody we've seen?
I think it almost kind of has to be at this point, because I can't think of anybody, of any unseen characters yet that it could be that maybe aren't owned by Fox or Sony. You know, I wanted to lean towards either Galactus or one of his heralds, but that's all owned by Fox right now. So the Asgardians, their storyline is the only one that I could see crossing over into the Guardians of the Galaxy, because they kind of already did with a little stinger. I could see it being also more than that.
All right.
But that's a guess. If that does come to pass, though, I do want a whole lot of ass kissing.
You just want us to, we'll have a whole episode, Justin, where all we do is talk about how right you are.
Thank you. That would be great.
Be like the exact one. You'd be like, this is my favorite podcast ever.
Ever.
Well, kind of going to maybe a little bit of a production aspect here. What do you think? I know, Aaron, you didn't see it in 3D, right?
No, and I'm really bummed because I it's a conversion. And anytime it's a conversion, I say, I don't want to see it.
Same here. I'm usually in that group also. Now, just, I know you did. You saw it in 3D, though. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like they finally kind of got it right?
Because I would
especially considering it's the post conversion thing.
I think that even though it's post conversion, I think they filmed it with an eye toward the 3D aspect of it, with some, you know, things coming at your face, as I've said in the past. I'd probably put it in the middle. I mean, it's not nearly as good at the 3D as something like Dread was, but there were enough moments of things playing off background and foreground and things coming toward the screen that I actually noticed, which means it's actually working. Cause if I don't notice it, then they just failed at it. But it was good enough that I enjoyed it in 3D, but I don't need it. You know, I don't know if I'd ever need to see it in 3D again, but it wasn't bad.
See, I personally thought it was one of the better uses of 3D that I've seen in a while. A lot of times it's dark. You can't really, it may be hard to distinguish what exactly is going on. Mm-hmm. Green Lantern was a good example of that. It was just, ugh, you know,
you can usually blame your theaters on that, because they need to bring up the brightness on their projectors, because of the theater I go to. That's one of the things they're always touting, is that they make sure to brighten up the 3D movies so you don't get
true.
That.
Yeah, that
darkness.
Is true.
I mean, I live in an area where, you know, your traffic is held up by tractors that are, you know, farm equipment that's holding up traffic, you know, on the highway here. So I'll keep that in mind. But from my experience here, and from some of the things I've read also, that this is a brighter use, especially with the use of the brighter colors, kind of like, almost like Pacific Rim in a way, where, you know, they're not afraid to use these bright blues and reds and yellows. And it really worked and kind of made it pop with the darker, kind of the darker backgrounds and stuff. But with all the lasers and limbs, the explosions, to me, this is the first movie I've seen in a long time where the 3D actually worked. And it actually felt like, it just felt like it was another character in it, almost, for me personally. You know, the mm-hmm. the use of depth perception with the passageways and the space and the landscapes and that kind of stuff.
Groot's little firefly thingy was really cool in 3D.
That was beautiful.
You know, and a lot of these 3D movies, you almost forget about the fact that it's in 3D by midway through it, and I just didn't feel that at all. It was just so, like I say, so much in your face or either far away. It just felt really neat.
And well, I think with a movie like this where there's so many special effects, I mean, so much of this is, you know, green screen. It's a lot easier to convert it. So
yeah,
that definitely plays into it, I'm sure. What was that firefly thing? Do we know? Like, where did he, I mean, obviously they asked him the question, like, where did you learn how to do that?
It's I don't know. It's probably like Gandalf's birds that just show up every time he just needs them.
If we're going to get out of here, we're going to need to get into that watchtower. And to do that, I'm going to need a few things. The guards wear security bands to control their ins and outs. I need one.
Leave it to me.
That dude there. I need his prosthetic leg.
His leg?
Yeah. God knows I don't need the rest of him. Look at him. He's useless.
All right.
And finally, on the wall back there is a black panel. Blinky yellow light. You see it?
Yeah.
There's a Quarnix battery behind it. Purplish box, green wires. To get into that watchtower, I definitely need it.
How are we supposed to do that?
Well, supposedly these bald bodies find you attractive, so maybe you can work out some sort of trade.
You must be joking.
No, I really heard they find you attractive.
Look, it's 20 feet up in the air, and it's in the middle of the most heavily guarded part of the prison. It's impossible to get up there without being seen.
I got one plan, and that plan requires a frickin' Quarnix battery, so figure it out! Can I get back to it? Thanks. Now, this is important. Once the battery is removed, everything is going to slam into emergency mode. Once we have it, we got to move quickly. So you definitely need to get that last. Or we could just get it first and improvise.
I'll get the armband.
Leg.
Between Glenn Close in this film and Redford in Winter Soldier, Marvel seems to be putting more money towards getting some actors in the films that cost a bit and that also have a pedigree in film. They're not just going for, you know, initially most of these movies were filled with little known to unknown actors, but now they're getting actors to at least be bit players in these films that add a bit of, I don't know, weight to it. Do you think that they're wasting money on bringing in bigger name talent onto these films, or do you think it's yielding results?
I don't know how much money they're spending on these guys. I have no idea what their salaries are, but I can tell you that Marvel is historically cheap when it comes to star salaries, with the exception of Robert Downey Jr. I think those actors just want to be a part of this universe.
You think it took much convincing?
Not anymore. I think probably like 5 years ago, absolutely. You know, I don't think Robert Redford ever would have joined Captain America 5 years ago, nor would Glenn Close, because those are kids' movies. But I think now with the popularity and the fact that you can almost guarantee these things are going to, I mean, Marvel's name, obviously, with how well this one did, Marvel's name sells. Like, this is not a property that's known. Anybody that says they were a big fan of Guardians is most likely lying to you or some internet hipster, because very, very limited copies of that comic ever were sold. It was a very small title, and they made it sell. And I think those actors just want to be a part of it. And, you know, for the exposure, for the universe, for all those things, you know, they want to be part of that world.
I think, you know, I think some of these older actors, the Robert Redfords, the Glenn Closes, I think maybe their kids, or at this point, their grandkids probably have an influence on, hey, you know, grandpa or grandma, I've got this job. It's for a comic book movie. It's going to be in line with all these others. You know, I don't know anything about this. It's something in space. There's a talking tree. I don't know what's going on with it, but do you think I should do it? And, you know, because I've heard of actors doing that. Well, I don't know. I've never heard of this stuff. I'm not familiar with the material, but my grandkid wants me to do it. So I figure, what the heck? And if that's the case or something like that, then that, you know, that's fine. But you've got Glenn Close, just in this movie, you got John C. Reilly, Benicio Del Toro, that are pretty big name actors and actresses, or just, I'll just stick with the actors. Even Vin Diesel, do you think this was a little bit of a waste, though? I mean, let's just say that combined their salaries was $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, do you think that could have been applied elsewhere? I mean, you could have gotten four people to do those roles that I don't know. I just don't think that I don't think Glenn Close brought anything that a cheaper actress, and I should say a less expensive actress. Let me rephrase that. Yeah. that sounds bad.
Yeah. Why is she got to be trashy, Brian?
Right. Exactly. But a Mimi Rogers or a Gillian Anderson.
Whoa,
or a
Mimi
Vivica
Rogers.
Fox,
where the just fuck did that name come from? Is she still acting? Is she alive?
Exactly. But do you think she, I mean, And don't focus on the names specifically, but just the general concept of these are a lot less expensive actresses that they could have brought something. I mean, Glenn Close is an exceptional actress. Do you really think that she brought something that just, you know, generic woman?
Not in this movie. Not in this movie. But I don't know how deep her role will go in the future. So I don't know. Do they have a plan for her or what? Because she's alive at the end. Maybe there's a three-movie plan for her. I don't know. She's an exceptional actress. I was really surprised they used her so little in this movie. So I got to think there's some use for her in the future.
I mean, I hope so, because I just don't feel like she was used in a way that Robert Redford was used in Winter Soldier.
I agree. And she's a fantastic actress, like you said.
Now, and Vin Diesel, I mean, he's only said four different words in the whole movie. And it's
three different words.
Four.
I am Groot.
And then he also said, we are Groot.
Oh, he
So actually
did.
Five. So, boom.
Well, that would still Game that over. Would be four. I'm confused. Justin, what were you saying?
No, I was just going to say, do you guys think that we will ever see someone in these films on the level of a Clooney or a Cruz or, you know, a Brad Pitt or an Angelina Jolie?
Like already a movie star?
Already a big established movie star.
No, I don't see the need for it. They've shown that they don't need to have a big star to make these work. Mm-hmm. They make stars. Marvel is the company that makes stars.
So then do you think then that it's better if the bigger name actors are playing a secondary or tertiary role as opposed to the star?
I think for this one,
I could see a Clooney playing someone in not the background, but someone say like who Robert Redford played or, you know, someone who's part of the film, but not the star of it.
Well, yeah, and they've done that. I mean, they had Jeff Bridges in the first Iron Man, you know, Robert Redford, Glenn. They've got a history of that. I just don't think they're ever going to have their main characters played by big stars. The reason I think they had Bradley Cooper and Vin Diesel in the background for this one is to bring and Glenn Close in the movie is to bring a little credence to the movie itself, because they knew it's a hard sell. But they had something to sell if they could just get it to people. And those names,
with this material, we're fighting an uphill battle here. But if we've got names like Vin Diesel and Bradley Cooper attached to it, that's going to, okay, maybe your casual moviegoer will give it more of a chance.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's what I think. I think their marketing division should get some kind of special award, because they are fantastic. Just fantastic. Now, speaking of the marketing, there was a huge media push leading up to this release. Did you avoid it or soak it all in, or were you possibly getting sick of it?
I was getting a bit sick of seeing the trailer pop up in basically every commercial break. It seemed like for every show that I watched. But, you know, I'm a modern guy with a DVR, so when I saw that trailer, it was like one or two frames of it as I was 30 seconds skipping through it. In the theaters, though, I got to say, on that big screen, I loved seeing the trailers. Whenever it would open up and you would see that image of the big gray stone wall with Peter Quill standing in front of it, a part of me, my heart would start to beat a little faster every single time. So it didn't bother me a bit in that aspect.
I avoided it like the plague for probably the last... what it feels like 2 months, or it may have been longer, it may have been shorter, I don't know, but it just feels like after I saw the first couple of trailers, I said, okay, I'm hooked. Especially that first trailer that came out with Hooked on a Feeling, and just that to me is probably my favorite trailer this year. And I will
still
watch.
Is that the Ooga Chaka song?
The Ooga Chaka. Yeah. And then you know.
It's been retitled.
And then the
Blue Suede called. They're like, it's Ooga Chaka now. Thanks.
And then they just kind of, they keep doing that. They kind of extend out the little drum beat or whatever, like doom, 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 doom. And it shows all the fast action scenes. I still get excited about that. And this movie, I mean, it lived up to that. But after a certain, I mean, these last probably 3 weeks to a month, there's a featurette coming. There's a behind the scenes. There's the trailers are showing more, you know, more scenes, and I'm like, okay, now I'm starting to get too much information. I don't want to know everything about this movie, and I've avoided it. And even still, I was telling Aaron this the other day that I have Dish, And every single commercial break start for a show I was watching was starting out with a trailer for this movie. And that was, I was just going, this is starting to get ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So I avoided it, and I got to admit it was pretty hard. Pretty hard to do so.
Same thing. Once I saw the first trailer, I was avoiding everything. I mean, I had people constantly sending me every time a new trailer was released. They would send it to me like, watch this. What? No, I don't want to, because I saw enough to know I wanted to see it. And I'm trying very hard, especially with as many movies as we see. Once I see the first trailer, or once I'm already sold on a movie, I try not to look anymore at it. Now, I will still read the news and stuff as long as there's nothing spoiling it. But I don't want to see any more about it. I want to experience it as fresh as I can.
Given, and speaking of fresh, given how much money this film has made on this opening weekend, do you think that all of that hype buildup and those commercials and constant trailer viewings, now in retrospect, does it all seem worth it?
I think it definitely helped. Put it this way, James Gunn nor Chris Pratt are what sold this movie to people. It's all, you know, nobody said, I can't wait to see the new James Gunn movie. You know, that just wasn't happening. You know, maybe for us in the little cult circle, but most people know. I think it had a great trailer. It had fun characters. It was new. And it had the Marvel name. You put all those things together, that's what sold it. And then word of mouth kept it going. Mm-hmm. And they were really smart by having, you know, Marvel doesn't normally have big screenings before their releases because they're all name characters. You know, people know who they are. This one, they were having sneak previews and previews for like weeks before the release. So there's talk all over the internet about it.
Well, they kind of had to, because I think positive reviews are what can help people convince them to go see a movie. And if you get that movie out there early enough and get enough good reviews ahead of time that you can slap into your trailer, then that's going to help get more people out. The reason I said speaking of fresh is that, you know, this movie did get 92% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is the same as the Avengers got, was 92%. The only Marvel film to score better is Iron Man, the first film, and it got 93%. So I think that those positive,
good company.
Yeah, I mean, those positive reviews really helped sell this movie as well.
I mean, kind of speaking of Avengers and Iron Man, how do you think this one kind of fits into the continuum of the Marvel movies? You know, a lot of these, they tend to set up, but, you know, Captain America may set up Thor, or Iron Man may set up the Hulk, or something might set up the Avengers, or how do you think this kind of fits? Do you feel like it did more to set up, or did you just kind of feel like a sidebar, Justin?
It definitely feels like a Marvel movie. It's got Marvel Studios DNA all over it. I didn't have to see an Iron Man or a Captain America to feel like I was still in the same universe that those characters existed in. And one of the things I'm really kind of appreciative now is in hindsight is the fact that at the end of the Thor, the Dark World movie, Sif and that other nameless dude brought that stone to the collector. That alone helped. Maybe that's what really helped join these two together for me, because I had seen the collector, I'd seen his environment. And so the fact that the Asgardians are a part of this far-reaching world as well as Earth brought things together. But in the end, because this didn't have a stinger that really kind of set up where the next movie's going, unless that stinger did, and if so, yikes! it does feel a little bit like a standalone as opposed to, you know, one rung amongst others leading up to something. But I do, though, you know, have faith that Marvel will continue to bring the Guardians into the more Earthbound storylines and bring them all together by the end of Phase 3.
All right.
What do you think, Aaron?
I don't know what I think. I'm sure there has to be a master plan. It figures in somewhere. It wasn't as extremely obvious to me for this film as it has been in the other ones. You know, especially with that stinger. And
Should we talk about that now?
Well, no, because Jason Taylor actually wanted to mention he wasn't a big fan of that second stinger. What other stinger could they have done?
Second stinger? What was the first one?
I don't know what the first one was, but that's what he said, the second stinger. Howard the Duck was a stinger at the end. And for people that didn't realize that, that was Howard the Duck. And actually, Seth Green voiced him. So that's
how could
cool.
you not know that was Howard? Well, okay, I can see people who maybe don't know the character exists, but
trust
it was
me.
A duck.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that don't know what Howard the Duck is and probably are better off for it, honestly. When it comes down to it, your life is better not knowing who Howard the Duck is.
I love that the first movie. Howard the Duck movie.
The movie, really?
I did. Well, I saw it, you know, I was younger, and there's just a part of me that will always view it through the eyes of a child, and it was funny as shit then, and I still find it funny. And Leah Thompson was so cute in it.
Oh, I gotta say, what the hell are you smoking, man? That movie was retarded.
The comic
is actually interesting. It's funny. It's unique. I kind of like the comic, but I don't want to see a movie ever again. And some people are like, does that mean they're gonna make a Howard the Duck movie? I don't think in a million years you're gonna see a Howard the Duck movie. He just might show up.
That will be the jump the shark moment that Scott has been waiting on.
There you go.
Maybe he's the final Infinity Stone.
Whoa. He is the gauntlet? He's got to shove his hand up the duck's ass or what?
Yeah. Thanos has to jam his hand up the duck's ass and wear him.
Now I can't wait for that to happen. I didn't like it either. Jason, I'll be honest with you and anybody else that wasn't a fan of Howard the Duck. I waited through all those credits, and Marvel movies have a shit ton of credits. And then
effects guys, holy shit.
Yeah.
It's like a wall of text.
Yeah. There's like four characters and the rest are all just CGI and special effects people. I was really let down with that. That was such a bummer to me. I'm like, you're trying to make a joke. I get it. I just didn't think it was funny. And it's a character I instantly get negative feelings about, mostly because of the movie. So I don't know. It just didn't work for me. You guys, did you care? You liked it? You didn't like it? What?
I was kind of let down. I've never been a big fan of Howard the Duck. Yeah, he's just one of those guys. I chuckled and found it whimsical. I didn't look too deep into it. I'm praying it's not setting up any more Howard the Duck appearances.
A trilogy?
But yeah, I just
the Duck of Destiny.
But there is, I do recognize that there is a kind of a cult following, you know, or appreciation of him. So
the Duck. Hey.
Oh God.
I mean, but from that aspect, I can kind of understand. I can chuckle and appreciate it a little bit, but I would have liked to have seen something, maybe setting up Ant-Man or Doctor Strange. Or something like that.
That's what I was expecting, was a little Doctor Strange.
What if it was the Tesseract that brings Howard to Earth?
How about Howard is never brought to Earth and he's stuck back in that cage forever?
Well, because if you remember, in the original Howard the Duck film,
I don't remember.
It was just some strange beam of energy that brought him to Earth. The Tesseract.
Still trying to forget, Justin. I don't want to remember.
Yeah, that's a part of my brain I've gladfully omitted.
It's like the one night stand with the one tooth girl. I don't want to remember that. I just want it gone. And that's what Howard the Duck is to me.
But you know, part of you enjoyed it.
No. Which it wasn't.
You only had the one tooth.
Which that wasn't so bad, but it was the really lazy eye that really put it over the top.
I was simultaneously disappointed and amused. I was disappointed because those stingers are notorious for helping set up what the next movie is going to be. You know, the stinger at the end of Winter Soldier with a reveal of Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch, I loved. And basically all of them have done that. This was, I felt like, the first time that I was kind of left not knowing where they were headed, not even given a hint. But like I said, I'm a fan of the first Howard the Duck film. I'm not proud of it, but it is a part of my childhood that will always amuse me. So in that respect, just the pure absurdity of seeing Howard the Duck sitting there, I laughed. And it wasn't a rueful, you know, kind of sad laugh. It was an actual, Howard the Duck.
It wasn't the. I've seen people like with Ben Affleck hate over that Howard the Duck cameo. I mean, like,
come on, people. There are worse. Yeah. Gaza and Israel are blowing each other up. There are bigger issues to be upset about than Howard the Duck.
I would say if they created a Howard the Duck movie, that would rival what you just mentioned. Yeah.
You think the atrocity of that would rival?
It would rival.
Thousands dying? All
yes,
right. All
absolutely. Right. Yeah, in my mind, yeah. Reese Bennett wants to know what we thought of all the Marvel Easter eggs in the movie. I don't remember seeing that many.
I wish he would have listed them.
Yeah, I kind of do too, because there was a lot of Marvel there. I don't know how to consider which was considered an Easter egg or not. Yeah, I don't know.
I think Brian said it best. Brian, how did you describe it?
Ah, shit, I don't know what God knows, whatever. I don't pay attention to myself.
Well, you were just saying that you were having so much fun watching it, you wouldn't have even noticed an Easter egg.
Yeah, especially the first time. Now, if I watched it, again, 10 times, I'd go to the theater to watch it 10 times. You know, Easter eggs is something that at least as far as I'm concerned, that's something that I wait for the Blu-ray or the DVD. And I sit there, and that's something that you pause and go, oh, look, the collector's room, there's something in a cage back there that's glowing purple. Maybe that was something hinting towards something down the road, or maybe that's a nod to the past. Well, they changed something, so maybe this is kind of a wink to those hardcore fans. That's what that's about. Not going to watch the movie at the first time. So I was enjoying the movie so much that I didn't care what was in the background or what maybe some of the Easter eggs and that kind of stuff. Now, again, if I go see this three or four times, by the third or fourth time, I'll probably be a little bit more scrutinizing of the background stuff. But first time around, no, that was just too much fun. I really couldn't care less about Easter eggs.
I do want to ask you guys, and it's just something that I thought of. I was kind of half expecting the Red Skull to show up at some point. Because if you remember at the end of the first Captain America movie, when he grabbed the Tesseract, he was teleported off somewhere into space. And mm-hmm. So I kind of kept expecting to see him either in the collector's area or somewhere in one of those market-type places. Because when is he going to show back up?
That's a good question. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. You never know. Marvel's all connected, man, so you never know. I don't know. I would like to see more Red Skull, though, because he's very prominent in Cap's life.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the dollars are in. The opening weekend was around $94 million. That's the estimate. So whatever the final numbers are, you know, you'll go to Box Office Mojo, you'll see. But that is the biggest August opening weekend for any movie. So it beat the last Bourne movie, and it is officially holds the record. It holds a record for...
It didn't also earn more movie than Winter Soldier did on its opening?
Did not. Winter Soldier made $95 million. Not unless, you know, the final numbers come in a little higher, but...
Yeah. All right, guys, let's all go back out and watch it again.
That's a lot.
I'll throw another 10 bucks its way.
That's close. It'll get you there. So I was shocked. And people were like, well, I thought it was going to be... No, you did not. And even Marvel was surprised it made that much money. So it's one of those that has taken everybody by surprise. It did do well. I got to say, from us at the hose, Brian did say it was going to do close to Captain America numbers. So kudos, yep. Brian. And Justin was very hopeful, but he did say hopeful. He never threw a dollar amount out. So, you know, you can't really claim it because you just said hopeful.
I think I put a number down, and I think it was around $90 million.
No, you didn't. You didn't put it on audio, brother. Doesn't count if you didn't put it on audio. I can't reference it.
I got a
it.
Note over here that says that.
Well, I got one. Yes, you know what? I got one, too. It says 94. Look at that. Right on the button.
But good. I mean, thank God I don't have to be pissed at the American movie going public this time. They have failed me in the past, but with Guardians of the Galaxy, they did not. Now, let's keep it going, folks. Let's keep going back and seeing this movie. Spread the love.
So in finality, in our final question, before that, let's all agree that we need a Baby Groot toy, dancing Baby Groot for Christmas this year.
In a pot. Just dancing around. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, I would pay good money for that.
That needs to happen. If it hasn't happened yet, it needs to happen.
Oh, you know by Christmas time, that'll be on the shelf at Target somewhere.
It better. Otherwise, I'm telling you right now, my Christmas will be disappointing. But our final question is, where does this land? We don't have to get your full tally, but where does this land in the overall Marvel movie universe for you? The cinematic connected universe. Brian?
By far, it's just the worst one of them all. Just kidding.
You just had somebody throw their stereo out the window.
Somebody just yanked their headphones out of their computer at work.
Mm-hmm.
So, honestly, I would have to be objective about it, because I did come out to this movie with that very just fanboy giddiness that, you know, I'd mentioned to you before that this reminded me of what it was like to be 11 years old again or 10 years old and watching a movie that was just, you know, like Indiana Jones or Star Wars or something like that, you know, years ago. It's hard to get that feeling anymore. And this movie did it for me. I mean, I'll repeat this on the regular podcast, but I mean, I have to give this a 10 out of 10 just for the fun factor alone. It wasn't perfect. There was a couple little minor warts, but I had such a fun time with this movie. That being said, I probably have to rank it second behind the Avengers. The Avengers had more leading up to it. It had all these other movies that tied in anticipation to see how they were going to do it. There were still lots of surprises with that movie. This movie was great from the aspect of not knowing these characters, introducing all of these characters at the same time and the background. And it did a good job of very quickly explaining histories and all that stuff. But,
oh, really, Justin? Look, you never get to say that somebody's long-winded, ever. Ever. Brian, continue, sir. I'm enjoying your rhetoric.
I say more than it's good, and everybody goes to sleep.
No, you know? Just Justin. Because you're cutting into Justin's time. He's like, I...
Exactly. You're eating into my time, bro.
So, yeah, basically, just with all the introducing all these new characters and quickly connecting with them emotionally. Fantastic job. I give it a 10 out of 10, but it's, as far as ranking it in the Marvel Cineverse, so to speak, only beat out by Avengers at this point.
Justin?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to have to start.
Good for you, Brian.
I earned that. I'm going to have to start reevaluating the way that I rate these movies. Because I know I gave the Avengers a perfect 10, and earlier this year I gave Captain America the Winter Soldier a perfect 10. I also give a perfect 10 to Guardians of the Galaxy, but of those three films, personally, for me, Guardians of the Galaxy is the best of the three. And the reason that it is because I am a space opera freak, and I have been since I was 5 fucking years old. And for me, a good space opera, a good romp through the galaxy is always going to be at the top of my list. I mean, my love for John Carter is greater, I think, than just about anybody else who saw that film. I loved it. It's in my DNA. And so Guardians is very much right in there with the rest of those kinds of movies. The Avengers is a fantastic movie, and I've seen it at least half a dozen times by now. And it hits a lot of my favorite spots when it comes to movies, but Guardians hits more of them. And for that, I have to give it my favorite ranking of all the Marvel films. But Marvel's doing such an amazing job of putting these movies together. It's like, at what point do I have to go, all right, this one's an 11 or this one's a 12, because they just get better and better and better. So I'm going to have to start to reevaluate. I may have to go back and retcon some of my review scores, because they're just all, eventually, if they keep at this pace, they're all just going to be tens.
I didn't like it as much as these guys. It's not. I did like it a lot. I gave it an 850. But like,
oh my God, you're so wrong.
I absolutely love when you don't love something as much as someone else. That means that you didn't like it. I can't even argue that retarded logic. I really enjoyed it. It's a very fun movie. Ronan really doesn't work for me at all. And I swear to God, I'll edit all of you out. Everything you said, I will take it out. All you will hear is me and Brian talking. All you will hear. It's a very fun movie. I had a lot of fun, but Ronan was not good. But overall, Very fun movie. You should take your kids. I think it's great that Marvel made a movie that's for everybody. And
I'm surprised at the cuss words, though. There's a few more than I thought there would be.
I thought there's a few less than I thought there would be.
Really?
I thought Rocket Raccoon was just going to be like throwing out F-bombs or S-bombs at least every other word, but I didn't get that many. But it was fun. I think Michael Rooker, I kind of feel bad for that guy at this point. He's kind of he is Michael. He's like Zoe. He's Michael Rooker and everything.
Yeah.
You know, but he didn't do bad. He's just always Michael Rooker.
He had a badass weapon, though.
He did. Yeah, he did.
Arrow. I'm sorry.
I can't take any. I don't care how many people he kills with that arrow. I can't take it too seriously when you got a whistle to use it.
Wish he had snaps.
I liked it. I thought the whistle was pretty badass, honestly. But
I just kept seeing Merle and the dad from Mallrats every time I heard him talk.
Yeah, Michael Rooker. That's who he is in everything. Everything.
Eating those stink-palmed pretzels.
Exactly.
I had definitely a lot of fun. Everybody should go see it. It's one of the most fun movies we've had in the theater in a while. So, not my favorite movie of the summer, but it is these two's favorite movie of the summer. So, take that for what it is.
Not even close.
I liked Dawn. Well, I think Dawn's a better movie. This is probably more fun. How's that?
Fair enough.
Okay.
Monkeys don't come close to this.
You can't even speak. You haven't seen it, so I don't want to hear your...
Monkeys and tree. Ooh, Caesar and Groot team up.
Would he just climb Groot through the whole movie? He's just swinging around him the whole time, or what?
Yeah, whatever.
Let
James Gunn figure that out. I don't know. I just come up with the ideas. I'll let somebody else put it on the screen.
Caesar throws shit as opposed to, making bombs.
Right.
I think it's going to do it for this episode, a special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Hope you've seen, obviously, you've seen Guardians of the Galaxy. Otherwise, we've just told you everything about it. Let us know if you should still see it. You should still see it again. I'm going to go see it again in 3D. Let us know if you like these extra episodes, and if we get enough positive feedback, we'll keep doing them. We always keep doing them as long as people like them. Brian, Justin, any parting thoughts?
We are Groot.
Yeah, we are indeed, and I'm going to go see it again in 2 hours. And fuck it, I'm going to pay the big money for the big screen and the big 3D.
Did you not the first time?
Oh, I did, and I'll do it again.
Okay. All right, then. I am, like I said, going to see it again in 3D. So thanks, guys, for listening. You can always find us at thehollywoodoutsider.com, facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Tweet us at @H_outsider. Email feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Or you can call and leave us a message at 818-814-6246. Be sure to tell your friends, subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or whatever you use to listen to podcasts. Remember, guys, the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn. I'm so tired, would you let me know? Everything's all right.